I strongly believe that most members of the community would prefer what we've got. However, the way this is all happening is we're not even being asked. They're doing it to us without telling us and hoping that we're not organised enough to be aware of what they're doing or take steps to stop them.
What is the motive behind those scientists? What is the funding behind the scientists? And that's become incredibly important in the last 20 years as the editors of the senior medical journals, peer-reviewed journals, have all spoken out at their disappointment about conflicts of interest in those papers that are being produced in the medical journal, often with drug company associations, but not always that case.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Nelson in South Island, I have Sue Gray. She's a lawyer who is very involved in travelling around New Zealand, addressing a growing number of meetings of concerned New Zealanders, telling about the dangers of 5G and all its attendant deployment methods, especially those that do not take into account due process, especially the fact that there's no consultation with the general public as to any health concerns about 5G. And also in the studio with me, I have Dr. Robin Kelly, a GP of 45 years and an award-winning author who has a wealth of very current knowledge as to the dangers of 5G and will be sharing the latest research and health statistics that is breaking news as of this time. So, meanwhile, more and more groups of concerned New Zealanders have felt compelled to form a movement all over the country to push back against the telco incursion into their neighbourhoods, and they are using Facebook as a means in which to do this. 5G is rapidly becoming a talking point, the important point being that it is a global issue too, because all countries, especially in the West, are having 5G imposed down on them all at once. And the question, why the hurry? So, Sue, kia ora, thank you for sharing with us today.
Kia ora, Tim, and thank you very much for inviting me.
Thanks, I'm glad. What is, from your travels very recently up and down the country, what are the drivers for you and what feedback are you getting from New Zealanders?
The overall driver for me, I'm a specialist in emerging issues in both the legal and scientific side. And 5G is an emerging issue, but it's an emerging issue that's being imposed on us without any explanation of what benefits there are for the public. And it's being assumed that it's safe when the evidence is that it's not safe. So it's a really, really important issue. And the more people hear about it, the more they want to ask, why are we getting this? The government spent over $2 billion on fibre optic cable that had been allocated by August 2017, and we were told that that was the end of our communication problems. We could all connect and do whatever we needed to know. Now, 2 years later, we've got a whole new system imposed on us with all these effects.
Yes, well, this is where you're getting the feedback or the pushback from these different groups, and I've been hearing them from Gisborne to Taupo and South Island. Can you just extend that for a minute or two, and then we can bring in Robin?
Yes, so there are groups all over the country that are springing up. I first spoke up at Mongawai on 5G. Since then, I've been to Waiheke Island. I've spoken to people in Tauranga around the Coromandel. I've done a public meeting in Taupo, Nelson. I've got one next week in Golden Bay. There are groups asking me from Alexandra, Queenstown, all over New Zealand. It's incredible, actually. I've been involved in a lot of issues like this, but this is the fastest growing of any issue that I've ever been involved in.
It's gaining momentum. And Robin, you were very recently on the Richie Allen Show, radio show in London, and you as a GP, as a family doctor, you want to be able to really make sure that the health of the human condition is at optimum levels. And can so you share what your perspective, please?
Hi, and thanks, Tim, for inviting me. And to be on with Sue is a great honour. Thank you. Yes, as a doctor, 38 years as a GP, I was in hospitals before then. When I started off as a doctor, it was reinforced in us that the important person is the one in front of you. That all the science in the world we should study, but then adapt to the person in front. We're not working for third parties. We're actually focused on that one person in front of us. So that is probably my advocacy for caution, comes from that perspective. It was also drummed into us very early on. Hippocrates' understanding of primum non nocere, which is first do no harm, which is the cornerstone of primary care practice, which is I've been involved in for so long. And also to really examine not only the science, but who is telling us the science? What is the motive behind those scientists? What is the funding behind the scientists? And that's become incredibly important in the last 20 years as the editors of the senior medical journals, peer-reviewed journals, have all spoken out at their disappointment about conflicts of interest in those papers that are being produced in the medical journal, often with drug company associations, but not always that case. So most of us, and myself particularly, has become very cautious. When I read a paper, I want to know not just the science, but also who is telling me the science. As a general practitioner, also, we have at our fingertips many, many specialists. So we understand where the specialists are coming from. And so we are in a, I'd say, that situation of trying to get a perspective, put everything into context, connecting the dots for the person, not getting too wound up in each individual specialty. And I have seen these parallels that with this introduction of Wi-Fi technology over the last 20 plus years and its development. And I've also seen parallels between that and the pharmaceutical marketing campaigns. And of course, the difference is that in most cases, we can either take a pill or not. I can prescribe a pill. I do not insist the person takes the pill. That person has the authority to take the pill or not. Here, we're introducing into people's lives, and we have done already, something that's going to be very difficult to avoid. Indeed, I have had people come to see me who are electro-hypersensitive, and they certainly are, and there are many other complexities that they have in their immune system, but their electro-hypersensitivity is the thing that's tipped them. And I'd have to say I'm pretty well impossible to help them, apart from recommending that they go and live as far away as they can from this pervasive force. We're all electrosensitive, but some people are electro-hypersensitive. And I recognize that as well. I have to advocate for these people and also for children who really don't know what's going on. And I have to say for pets as well, I've become interested in advocating for pets.
Yes. Well, I mean, all these sort of the biota that surround us. So we've got trees. They say that we're going to have to maybe chop down a lot of trees in the city so that this signal can go from point A to point B without any interruption. There are many, many variables here. And Sue, can you add something to this, please, from your perspective?
Yes, look, thank you. And that's so interesting what Robin's explained with the what I call the issue of informed consent, because it's quite well established in medicine that generally you can't, as Dr. Kelly says, you can't force someone to take any medication without a choice. And yet with radiation, we do have a choice whether or not we use a cell phone or a smart meter to some degree, or whether we use a cordless phone or a fixed line. But we have no choice at all about a transmitter that's put on the street outside our house. And not only do we not actively asked about it, but the rights that we would normally have to go through council and resource consent processes have been actively removed in this case. So I believe there's a really serious issue about lack of informed consent for exposure to radiation. And the situation's even worse because they know it's potentially dangerous. And like Robin, I've had many clients who are electrosensitive, and indeed I've started a register for people who are electrosensitive because they often feel very isolated and vulnerable because they just find a place to live. And somebody comes along and puts a cell tower next to their place, or in some cases puts a Wi-Fi transmitter or whatever outside their bedroom. So there are a group of people who desperately need some sort of human rights protection, but currently they're not protected at all, and they're actively being disadvantaged day by day, week by week, as more and more radiation transmitters are rolled out in our countryside. So we've got this whole issue with human health, and we've got also this issue, as you mentioned, with the trees. And I was absolutely horrified when I found out that the telcos have been going around our councils asking for our council plans to be amended to make it a permitted activity for them to prune trees to roll out the irradiation. Or they're very non-specific about what they're doing, as I understand it. They're just asking generally for more powers to make necessary modifications to the environment for infrastructure purposes and that type of thing. But what it means is, what they're interpreting it is that they can come along and chop down trees. Now, if communities knew that they had a choice between using their hardwired phones and the internet over their hardwired systems and keeping their trees, keeping their health, keeping the bees in the garden and all the other benefits that we've got at the moment, compared to the risk of being able to download movies faster or driverless cars but losing our trees and everything else, I strongly believe that most members of the community would prefer what we've got. However, the way this is all happening is we're not even being asked. They're doing it to us without telling us and hoping that we're not organised enough to be aware of what they're doing or take steps to stop them.
I couldn't agree more. It's so interesting because if you look at the medical literature, there are many papers coming out about simply being in nature enhances health. In fact, it's being recommended that just a walk in nature, don't have to hug a tree, don't necessarily have to meditate, although those things I think are also enhancing. And the joy of owning pets. All this connection with life is life-enhancing. The epidemics out there are the epidemics of anxiety, depression, showing in their worst form, of course, as suicide in our young people. And here we have many answers that are coming through, saying spend more time in nature, gently walk, gently absorb the environment that's around you. And here we have a counterculture coming in saying the complete opposite, that let us feed your addictions, let's feed your dependence on technology to such an extent that you're going to do this at the extent of your health. I find that deeply disturbing. I'm not saying no technology, I love technology, but it's gone out of balance completely, to a point that it's affecting the health of our young people, and it's getting younger and younger. And most of the doctors who are very concerned about this, physicians around the world, are advocates for the children first. And I find this a driving force, really, when it comes to my advocacy.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. It's really worrying that they're putting robots before people. As people, we have feelings and needs, and we want to be able to choose certain things in our lives. We don't want to just be units of currency that are conveniences for people who want to make money from us. And yet our whole system seems to have been driven down this path of whoever's got the money and the power can choose, and it doesn't really matter what people want. And it's not at all surprising that people are having such a lot of mental health and anxiety problems. The more you actually think about what's going on, we'd all have anxiety problems. It's really, really concerning.
I agree. I mean, just about every New Zealander has been phoned some corporation or business and put on hold, and then they're shunted through to a digital response. And if we think that's pain that's driving us mad, we'll wait until they start getting into the unreal AI and IT and the business of computerized voice, robots and droids, etc. Can I mention too that I have been told that if you go through airport security area, I mean, it's very, very intense radiation there. Well, this could actually be for us, the general public, living in a zone like the airport security area 24/7, 365 days for the rest of our life, which, of course, will just put our whole cellular body in overload.
If I may answer that, I agree. I think people are so close to a tipping point. When you look at this radiation, non-ionizing radiation, you've got to see it in context of the other things that are loading our immune system. Worry, unresolved grief, chemical toxins, emotional toxins. And a big concern for me is that it doesn't take much to tip people over, and then they become food intolerant as well. So we've got to see this as a stepwise cumulative assault on our immune systems. And how many people are going to be tipped over? But not only that, if they're going to be tipped over, then the deniers will come, because they'll say, well, it's nothing to do with us. It's to do with some other problem in their lives. Well, it's to do with all of that, and everything must be looked at. And yet everybody will be running for cover as people will be becoming sicker, possibly apart from the medical profession and the health professions who will be there to look after them. Yeah, I see this as a tipping point for many, many people.
Yeah, I've come to much the same conclusion from my work. And what's a real problem with the law is the law looks for cause and effect. Mm. And when things are caused by a combination of multiple causes and their accumulative effects, the law cannot deal with that situation. Part of the reason we've got such poor research on 5G and other radiation is that there's basically nowhere you can get a control study done where people have got no exposure to radiation at all. I mean, you may be able to find a sort of remote community of Amish in the hills somewhere, but generally speaking, it's no point monitoring people at their home because they travel during the work day and they're working with radiation, or it's just everywhere. But you can't prove whether the cause of your illness was the cell tower outside your home, or the cell phone you used, or the smart meter outside your bedroom, or your computer in your office, or a combination of all of those things, or a combination of all of those things with the fact that your dog died last week, or all the different factors that are going on. And the law just can't cope with that at all. We need a whole new system of assessing risk. In fact, I've come to the conclusion that science is not actually very good at assessing risk either. It was never really designed to assess risk. It was designed for helping develop hypotheses of how things worked. And like law, it's got its limitations.
Well, this bleeds into the fact that I have heard that Lloyd's of London and some of the big reinsurers are not prepared to insure when it comes to health as a result or implications from 5G technologies.
Yeah, we've got a big problem. If the insurers say the risk is too big to quantify and assess, then you would have thought that governments would also be coming to that same conclusion. It's a little bit different in New Zealand because of ACC law, and because of ACC law, we can't sue our cell phone company or our telco who's got a tower outside our window for personal injury. Potentially, we could sue them for harm to our dogs, which is an interesting one, and we can sue them for health and safety harm. But ACC is normally responsible. Now, you would have thought that ACC would be extremely concerned about 5G and about the risk to workers' well-being and the potential liability for them. But so far, I haven't heard any action from ACC, and I wonder if they're doing anything at looking at 5G and the associated risks.
I don't think so. I've been in communication with Health and Safety Director at the university I work with, and have given him all the science from both sides, but particularly the science that really would support a precautionary principle. And his reaction to that is, oh, put it aside, I've got more important things to do at the moment. I've become rather cynical at this, and I think the only thing that will make them wake up was to look at the new health and safety laws and the new interpretation, is that if we don't whistleblow health issues, potential problems that will affect us and our staff, and in our case, our students, then we're liable. We're actually liable for fines. Sadly, we think this possibly is the way to get around this for those who are so locked up in cognitive dissonance or willful blindness that they can't see actually what's happening out there. So I think the new health and safety laws and their enforcement is going to be very important, particularly for doctors who will begin to speak out, I hope. There aren't many doing what I'm doing at the moment, but I think more will speak out as they see the potential risk. We're trying to stop something happening before it happens. One of the concerns I've had since I've been researching this over the last couple of years is actually to be really concerned now about what we've got already and the cumulative effects of those frequencies that we've been exposed to. And knowing that the safety margins or the safety levels are totally inadequate, and that has become my focus, because what we've got already, we know, is damaging. The 5G, if you like, is likely to ramp it all up, but we've got enough to deal with what we've been exposed to already.
Totally agree. I just got an official information response back from the Minister of Communications, Chris Farfoy, a couple of days ago, and attaching a letter from the Acting Minister of Health, Julianne Genter. And very interesting, the same old thing. Her advice is that there's been much public interest in 5G recently, and the Ministry of Health is continuing to monitor new research on the subject. However, it is important to remember that 5G is just a new application of radio technology. So they're not recognising. The minister responsible for the health of New Zealand on newer technologies, frequency radiation and 5G, is not even acknowledging that it's a new risk on top of what we've already got. She's not acknowledging that the different frequencies may make a difference. It's microwave frequency radiation. We know that microwaves are harmful, and she's saying, oh, well, it's just more of the same. Then she says, I am advised that the balance of research evidence suggests that the radio frequency fields produced that comply with international guidelines do not cause adverse health effects. Well, there's a lot of weasel language in there, isn't there? I'm advised that the balance of research suggests. Now, when we're talking about our health and the health of our children, the health of our family and friends, and even unborn children, we would like to have some more security than balance of research suggesting that it might be okay for us, wouldn't we? It just seems so sort of lax and, oh, you know, don't worry, it'll be all right. Let's wait and see. Well, no, we can't wait and see with 5G. We've got to get proactive. We've got to get mindful. We've got to actually make some informed decisions. And we've got to stop it until we've got the information to show that it's safe, not roll it out until we prove it's harmful.
I couldn't agree more. I've had those letters as well. The last time I responded actually to the final person in the chain who sent me the letter, who actually identified herself, obviously a junior person in the office, asking what her opinion is, because it's going to affect her and her future. The red flags come to me when people talk about their advisors, who they do not name. In other words, if it all goes wrong, they feel they're going to be protected because I was only doing what I've been advised. Okay. And I find that very disconcerting. And maybe just want to talk about a specific paper that's just appeared in our New Zealand Medical Journal in response to Sue Pockett's concerns about radio frequency electromagnetic energy. I'm not going to be judgmental about this, but I'm just going to make it clear what they are saying. And these are the two professors, Professor Mark Elwood, who's here in Auckland. He's a professor of oncology and epidemiology, not clinical oncology, but epidemiological cancer, and Andrew Wood, who is over in, he's a professor of biophysics in Melbourne. And they responded with a several-page viewpoint paper in the New Zealand Medical Journal called, and the title of the paper was Health Effects of Radio Frequency Electromagnetic Energy. And I'm just going to go to one point that they make that got me very, very concerned. And on the second page, under whole animal studies, they say this: recently, the most extensive studies yet have shown that some possible cancer increases in male rats with lifelong exposure, but with no similar increases in female rats or in male or female mice. And they give, below that, a website address, which I duly copied. It actually put me through to another website, which is basically the National Toxicology Program study that was completed and reported upon in 2018. And so this is the very website they refer you to. And this states on the page that they refer you to, what did the studies find? The NTP studies found that high exposure to radio frequency radiation, 900 megahertz used by cell phones, was associated with one in bold type, clear evidence of tumours in the hearts of male rats. The tumours were malignant schwannomas. Some evidence of tumours in the brains of male rats. Tumours were malignant gliomas. And some evidence of tumours in the adrenal glands of male rats. The tumours were benign, malignant, or complex combined pheochromocytoma. They go on, it was unclear if tumours observed in the studies were associated with exposure to radiofrequency radiation in female rats at 900 MHz and male and female rats at 1900 MHz. This is also known as equivocal evidence. They go on, and this is important. The final conclusions represent the consensus between NTP, the National Toxicology Programme. This study was a $28 million study in cooperation with the National Institutes of Health over there, between NTP and a panel of external scientific experts who thoroughly reviewed the draft NTP technical reports at a public meeting in March 2018. The results are based on NTP's four categories of evidence that a substance may cause cancer. Clear evidence is the highest. So clear evidence of tumours in the hearts of male rats was the highest they could say. Some evidence, second. Equivocal evidence, third. And no evidence, fourth. Now, the way this has been reported, without a reference, a proper reference at the back of this paper, I'll restate what they said. Recently, the most extensive studies yet have shown some possible cancer increases in male rats. Now, that is completely at odds with where they referred us. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I'm saying, are they incompetent or is there something else going on? I really don't know. But this is how, and this paper, this National Toxicology Program, is not quoted by our government, and these are the people who are advising our government. It has been cut out of the website that the government are putting out on health and 5G. They are excluding this, which they all agree is the most important study. Okay, now, whole animal studies aren't the whole thing. We have to put those in context. But to deny this and to change this, I think, is scurrilous.
The way that the government is advised is shocking. And I've been following this for years. So they have an interagency advisory committee on the health effects of non-ionizing radiation. But they choose who can be a member of that committee based on the expectation that they won't find that there's any harm effects from radiation. And they choose what information they give them to look at, and they exclude information that doesn't suit them. That committee is supposed to report to the minister if there's any suspicion of harm. Now, in May 2011, the World Health Organization and IARC did a really big, important report classifying radiation, electromagnetic radiation, as a class 2B possible carcinogen. And that was supported by a massive document called the IARC Monographs Volume 102, which had all the explanation of why they'd come to this conclusion. Now, our Interagency Advisory Committee didn't consider that that was significant enough to even mention it to their minister. And that's the type of problem we've got. And again, as you've mentioned, the minister then gets advice from nameless officials, and it's very vague advice, but they don't point out what's missing out of the advice. And so the minister may well be acting in good faith based on what they've been told. But the advisers have so much power over what they tell them. And for some reason, those advisers seem to be following an agenda to roll out 5G, not an agenda of acting in the public interest and fairly protecting the community who they're supposed to be acting for.
I've communicated this to those ministers as well, together with information coming from Cyprus, where there's a committee on environmental and children's health, which is a combined committee of the Ministry of Health, the Cyprus Office for the Commissioner of Environment, and the Archbishop Macarius Hospital. And they're all combined to take Wi-Fi away from preschoolers, to limit it in primary schools, but also to take it out of the hospitals, children's hospitals, particularly intensive care. They all quote this as well. They quote this, which have already the 2B status of electromagnetic radiation. But they also say that it is likely to increase, to go up the scale, to even somewhere in the ones, probably as a result of such papers that I've quoted here. So, and I've sent this to our ministers and saying, look, this is an initiative. Could you tell me where they're wrong? Could you say where their arguments are faulty? I've never had a reply, and I actually have never had a reply from any of the science that I've sent over. to them?
Well, I can tell you why, because I requested information from them about what advice they'd received from their own advisors, but also from different categories of experts and independent people. And they came back and said, no, we've only received advice from our own experts. And I said, well, I know that you've received advice from all sorts of other people. And they said, no, that's not advice. That's just correspondence. So I've now set the minister a little test, because we're very lucky that a world expert on 5G, Darius Lezinski, has offered to come to New Zealand next month. And so I've written to the Associate Minister of Health, Juliet Genta, and I've offered her a private meeting with Professor Lezinski so that she can personally be briefed on his concerns and his information about 5G and radio frequency radiation. Now, I'm waiting to see whether she will take up this offer, because if she does, that's fantastic. If she doesn't, and she's determined to only receive advice from one advice stream, and that's our much less qualified New Zealand experts than Professor Lezinski, then it's going to be extremely concerning.
Yeah, very much so. We have to really focus on what's happening at a governmental level, particularly as she's the acting health minister and representative of the Green Party. I'm speaking with Sue Gray, a lawyer, and Dr. Robin Kelly, having them explain the difficulty in sharing and getting information out in relationship to the health effects of 5G technologies that are going to be rolled out in New Zealand.
It's also become apparent to me in the last couple of weeks of how they are selling 5G in relation to health. In fact, the health information that they'll be gathering from everybody around the world is the most important part, and it's the biggest investment opportunity, apparently, for 5G. Ericsson was saying that by the middle of the next decade, it'll be a $76 billion investment. They're selling this as an investment because they're seeing that the information that they can carry on 5G on those narrow wavelengths is going to actually be a surveillance for everybody. Everything you know about them, every cell is going to be identified. And this is the investment. They are selling this as being essential for health. And it's so bizarre, isn't it? The very thing that they're selling is toxic to health. Although,
you know, they're poisoning their health with their assessment.
But then rather cynically,
research,
rather cynically, I thought, well, what's the worst thing that could happen to this investment? That's everybody who could become healthy. So maybe they're onto something there. So this is another huge area for it. This is actually going to be the biggest application for 5G is going to be health surveillance, which will be sold as obviously as something of great benefit to you.
That's right. They'll be able to check everybody's blood pressure and heartbeat throughout the whole country. And if there's an announcement made, they'll be able to en masse check everybody's heartbeat go up or down, whatever the information is. I'm going to jump in across here. Why in New Zealand is the mainstream media virtually silent on any 5G health issues? And I want to ask people in letters to the editors of the major newspapers, who always sing in one voice now, as I and myself in alternative media, I'm increasingly seeing the censorship by omission. And when information is censored, we don't know what information was there in the first place. And so we're not hearing about anything about the health risks at all, and we're only hearing about the sizzle of what 5G can do, you know, the driverless cars, rapid downloads, and now the America's Cup in real time. You can see from every boat and from above and below and all this sort of thing. It's just a big, huge media raucous party without taking any consideration to essentially the health of all biota, particularly humans.
I see the media, mainstream media, as the tech industry. They are basically there. Propaganda arm. In fact, they're in collaboration with it. I had another red flag a few months ago when it was clear that New York Times was there in collaboration with Verizon for their 5G news program. The idea was they were going to produce news in real time in virtual reality 3D, holographic reality, and it was going to be instant for the person. In other words, they were creating through their narrative another virtual reality for people. And that is the game. That's what they're all after. So once the New York Times do it, everybody's going to be following. They see that that is the future, that they are the tech companies. They are the mouthpiece of the tech companies. And I'd have to say the governments are now the mouthpieces of the tech companies as well.
It appears that way because Spark, New Zealand's largest telecom industry, has jumped into bed with TV One, particularly with the America's Cup. And we notice in the newspaper, the New Zealand Herald Now, you can actually see that the certain people from TalkBack ZB is also affiliated with the Herald. So what it is, these media companies are coming together to support their own agenda.
I don't understand why rugby can't be shown on TV. Isn't that what TV's for? Why do we need to have people watching it on their phones? None of it makes sense, and not in public health terms, not in environmental terms, not in allocation of resources or anything else. It's crazy. So I hardly ever watch TV, but when occasionally I have, I'm shocked by the Vodafone and other advertorials and all these sort of things that they're showing all the time to try and get people to buy their products. But when you don't watch it very much and when then you suddenly do watch it, it's quite overwhelming.
It's in your face, Sue, and it's a greater magnitude. And I'm just going to overwhelm us again because there's one thing that I must add to this whole discussion, Sue. The fact that New Zealand citizens now have been forced into forming groups to fight the telecom industry and their unholy alliance with the New Zealand government. I mean, it's totally upsetting. And I ask you this, who of you has the time to attend meetings, sign petitions, write submissions, make signs, put up stalls, and continually research and read up on this untested technology and wonder how it's going to affect our children's health and society? And there's no one. None of my friends, many of them in their 60s and 70s and even 80s, want to be doing this. It's tiring, it's energy sapping, time consuming, and a costly process. And we have all more, far more urgent priorities like family and living to attend to. But due to the government and their departmental gatekeepers refusing to engage with highly qualified professionals means that the people who we elected to be our servants have now decided to run away with their own agenda, lockstep with telecos and mainstream media to foister on us an untested technology that by far the majority of New Zealanders think can at least wait a couple of more years before being rolled out, until the research and the testing by independent professionals has been accomplished and made public. See, all my friends, they're tired. They don't want to be doing this, but we are impelled, we're forced to actually take care of our children, our pets, and the future of humanity.
And you're absolutely right, Tim. It's a huge problem. The 5G is a problem, but they're doing it with Roundup in our food. They're trying to put fluoride in our water without properly testing that. There's all kinds of different things, the 1080 in our environment. There's so many things that they're doing to our environment, and every time the burden is on the public to try and stop them instead of the government to look after us. And so this whole concept of let's assume it's safe until it's proven to be dangerous is back to front, and it's putting the burden on the public when the burden should be on the telcos or the others that want to do new technologies and release new substances to prove that their substances are safe. But our enforcement agencies, the EPA particularly, and other agencies, they're just not home. What are they doing? Why is the Environmental Protection Agency not protecting the environment? Why is the Ministry of Health not protecting our health?
This is an issue for the next election. Very important, because I know, I've been saying for years, we are always on the back foot. We can never get on the front foot because all of a sudden some other science or some other technology is pushing itself, like GE and glyphosate and God knows what else. And so, yes, I agree with you, Sue. And this is what I think with all the different groups who are coming up into being now, they are finding that we've got to act. But it's also unifying the country. It's actually bringing people together to realise that in participative democracy, we have to be on the front foot, because our elected servants, like elected servants in all other countries in the West, have completely reneged on any principle or ethic or to do good for the people who voted them in.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is just default, that they can't break outside of the status quo and they're not paid to be creative, so they're not. But as a community, we need a vision of what we do want, and then we need to work out how we can get it. Because if we don't know what we want, we just keep losing what we've got, and we get further and further away from where our natural humanness would take us, and we're being overtaken by the sort of robotics and all this other technology that just isn't what our health and well-being needs. Robin covered some of that before, the type of outcomes he's seeing for patients.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'd have to say one benefit of all the frustration that we've felt, I'm sure Sue has as well, over the last couple of years, is amazing insight now that I've gained into the academia, into how governments work, how industry works, and an insight into why this world is developing into a world that has not combined head and heart. It is just totally focusing on either a single bottom line or an intellectual focus without heart. And when I hear people talk about artificial intelligence, I say, yes, it could be useful, but the important word in artificial intelligence is the word artificial. It's not true intelligence. It doesn't put things in context. And yes, it's going to be important, and I love it if I'm on the internet and it seems to intuitively know what I want. In some ways, that saves me time. Concerns me a bit as well, but it saves me time. And I'm sure that this technology could be adapted to surgery, to wonderful medical techniques. But just like with ionizing radiation, there's a switch-on time and a switch-off time. We have to know how much is toxic to us. And the difference between ionizing radiation and this, of course, is that we're not exposed to ionizing radiation, certainly all the time. We will monitor that, and we have to monitor it as well. So, yeah, and also so the lack of common sense in academia totally bewilders me. That quote that I did earlier on there, do they really think that people are that stupid to take everything that they say as gospel? But it is gospel. It seems to be a belief system that we're dealing with. So it's a great eye-opener for me, and I think that's the sort of red pill that we say that's probably spreading to the community. And it spread to the community in England probably with the whole Brexit debate and seeing what happens to governments when they're totally confused. So I do think there's probably some silver lining in that there's a waking up to this. And I think the waking up, the most powerful waking up, can be from mothers, from teachers, from grandmothers, I'd like to say fathers as well, for the next generation and future generations, that we need to stand up and say things now. And I believe that's the most powerful voice, that we are not just saying it for ourselves, but saying it for the future generations and our children, and those who cannot say it do not have a voice.
Yeah. Well, there's so much power when people do unite and come together and share their own experiences and find common ground, connect the dots. I think one of the problems with academia is that people tend to be very specialised on a very, very narrow topic. But with, for example, 5G, where it's to do with biology and medicine, it's to do with physics, it's probably to do with the chemistry of cells, at least biochemistry. And none of the experts really understand the whole overall implications of these things and the risk assessment and everything else. So it has to be something that's done by our community, where our community chooses what we want and then asks academic answers on the questions that we've got, rather than us being told what's okay and what's not. I use technology all the time, but I like to think it's a mindful use of technology, that we choose technology to help us, not to run our lives.
I agree. And not only that, we have to see things in holistic terms. Everything is connected with everything else. Academia are in silos. They don't actually see how everything is integrated. Holistic principles are basically ignored in most of the universities. One of the greatest uptakers of all this technology are the young people. Are you getting much in the way of feedback there? Because I've got a young 15-year-old here in the North Island who has got 300 people on Instagram on 5G. And so I'm wanting to be able to get this information out to young people because they are the ones who sleep with their telephones under their pillow and they're completely immersed in the whole field of energy that we don't know what their health is going to be like by the time they get to 40 or 50 or 60 and young women wanting to have children in the future. Have you heard much feedback from the young? How do we contact them?
Yeah, look, I haven't personally had much connection at all with the young except for my own family. But Dr. Mary Redmayne in Wellington did a whole PhD thesis on cordless phone use by intermediate school-age children. And she was absolutely horrified that a large proportion of them would have had enough exposure to have potentially significant increase in brain tumours by the time they were, I think, in their late teens. So that was based on the Interphone study that was done a few years ago where they called a heavy user someone that used their cell phone for half an hour a day, which isn't actually that much compared to what a lot of people use their phones. And they found that the heavy users had a significant increase in brain tumours on the side of their brain where they used the phone. So Mary's work was really concerning, but as far as I know, there's been no real follow-up on that, and it's very hard to engage with this sort of younger groups on 5G radiation because they're the group that it's pitched at. They tend to be addicted almost to social media. There's a lot of other issues apart from the health effects, actually, with their use. There's issues that impacts on learning, there's bullying, there's addiction issues, all kinds of issues, particularly for younger people, but for others as well. And they know that those issues are concerning, but again, there doesn't seem to be any significant government work going into it, and when there is some indication of harm, it tends to get glossed off. But it is a really important point. How do we engage with the younger people? Because we're engaging with the parents and particularly the grandparents, and they're really concerned, but how do we get to the young people?
Yeah, I spend a day a week in student health, and of course those coming through now are those born in this century, also called the digital natives. So they have been conditioned into this life that their primary contact with other people is through technology. And of course, the links are strong between this and the mental health of young people. A huge concern. It's a huge concern. But talking individually to them in the brief consultation time that I'm allowed, I do hear a concern from quite a few of them. They're beginning to realize it. But to me, it starts much earlier. It has to start in the preschool time with mothers and teachers. I think these are the most important people. Because we need to approach this so that there is not conditioning to technology to such an extent that we're excluding the normal attachment, healthy attachments people have to other people and to nature. And I think that the focus must be on the young. And I see around the world the physicians and the scientists, independent scientists, who are concerned about this are focusing on the very young because we see that this is the place to start, even though those who have already been exposed, I think, are at huge risk. We must make sure that the youngest of our young are not going to be, this isn't going to compound with them, because they think that could be a desperate situation. So the younger that we can get, the better. And I think that's the focus. That's the important solution, is to get this to the natural energies and intuitions of mothers and school teachers who are there for the good of the children and the health of the children. They're the people that we need to have on our side. They're already on our side, but they already also have been conditioned with this propaganda that's being thrown to them from the media.
Yeah, I've been meaning to try and make contact with midwives because I think midwives would be a really great group to educate, and they can educate the pregnant mothers before the children are born and get them off to the best possible start.
I contacted the New Zealand Kindergarten Association round about in June, and we had a very cordial communication. They asked me to send some information through to them. So over a period of about 3 months, I sent 3 emails. But after the third email, they said, look, could you please take our email address off your list. We don't want to be able to have your information sent to us. And I presume that the Kindergarten Association must be also receiving support, government support, cash from the government. And so all of a sudden they realise, oh my gosh, conflict of interest. We're in the middle, we're caught in the middle of this one, so they decided to keep quiet. But there's all these different play centres. And again, we really have to get to the young mothers and their fathers, but we have a big job ahead of us to really get this groundswell going, particularly when we don't have any media support in the mainstream media, and it's essentially it's stalls and posters and Facebook. I think Facebook can be used very well. This is one thing we can actually use Facebook for, is to actually organise ourselves, join up all groups of cells, and then take it further.
But how could it be a conflict of interest for an education institute to get information on all sides of an issue? Isn't it just even ironic that they might even be concerned about that? And your suspicions are very true, because I did quite a few talks about Wi-Fi in schools a few years ago, and some of the schools listened very carefully to what I said. The parents were concerned, the Board of Trustees were concerned. They then get information from the Ministry of Education saying, oh, no, but Wi-Fi is safe.
Okay, can I also say what we're up against? Because Spark has a program called the Patients Project, which is connecting kids with cancer who are in hospital via 5G to their classrooms. And this is a quote which I have in front of me. The goal of the Patient Project is to take this to every sick child in the country who has a long-term illness. And 5G is going to be a part of that. What they're wanting to do is to connect them through virtual reality glasses, headsets, instantly to their classroom through 5G Wi-Fi technology into the cancer ward. And see, and the person who suggested this, I think, has been in very good faith, a guy called Ben Martell, whose son died of cancer. And, of course, it's very difficult to argue with such an emotional argument. But just compare that, and apparently this has the backing of our local children's hospital, compare that with what's happening in Cyprus and the Archbishop Makarios Hospital when they're getting everything out of there. So these are the strong emotional arguments that are being put out by Spark to connect sick kids, using the sick kid thing, with their classroom for that instant connection with their classmates. It's staggering.
Why can't they connect by fibre optic cable?
Absolutely. But they won't, because they... Tim and I attended a 5G expo a few months ago downtown. And they said one of... Because they were scratching to work out exactly what 5G was going to do for people. And one person said, the most important thing is that when you're wearing virtual reality goggles at the moment, if you move your head, you get sick, all right? So this change in the latency means that you do not get sick when you are immersed into a virtual reality. And he said the other thing is that they're going for is that instead of these rather ugly goggles, you're going to be wearing spectacles you can wear on your first date. So you go to impress this other person on your first date, and she sees these glasses on, or he sees it, and says, well, that's great, you're in another reality. It doesn't say much about me.
Whoa.
Yeah. The breakdown. Sue, in closing, what is your best advice to listeners, please?
To take this very, very seriously, find out all the information you can, share it with your friends, boycott the telcos that try to force 5G on you, and lobby the government for a moratorium so we can have more time to think this through.
Thank you. Yes, moratorium. Robin?
Well, I think it's to get through to people that there is no guarantee that this is going to be safe. In fact, all the red flags are the opposite. And once we get into this, the technical companies will be able to ramp the things up to such an extent that people and their own families will get sick. And I think we've got to approach people personally about what they really feel about their families and future generations.
Okay. So, Sue, thank you so much for your valuable time and what you're doing up and down the country. And just it's a wonderful, wonderful service that you're doing, and Robin, as a doctor as well, taking care of children, taking care of business, no, taking care of humans. Thank you very much for coming here and being with us today.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks,
Sue. Thanks, Tim. Awesome what you're doing too, and just connecting everybody and sharing all this information. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just wild. I mean, it's just astounding. We just have to keep on doing it and trusting that somewhere overseas too, that there could be a big breakthrough. The fact that that Brussels thing happened. Now, Sue, there's one other thing. The New Zealand Doctors group that you mentioned last time, they are still coordinating. They're still working out a strategy to come forward because they don't want to be picked off one at a time. They're coming through as a group.
I believe so. There's actually been quite a few New Zealand doctors have been speaking out publicly, which is fantastic because it's very rare that you get an issue serious enough that doctors will speak out publicly. But on 5G, they have been. And they're a group that their numbers are growing. And as people feel more confident in speaking out, there's more doctors being prepared to speak. And I will follow up with what's happening with that doctor's letter that they're sending. There's an open letter to the Prime Minister that's floating around somewhere, and I'll track down where it's got to.
Excellent. Okay, well, love to you and family, and thank you, Robin, love to you, and we'll be into the next step very soon.
Thank you.
Fabulous, thank you.
Thank you both.
Radio, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Sue Gray, lawyer from Nelson, and Dr. Robin Kelly here from Auckland. We have also got here outside Vodafone and Taharoa Road here in Takapuna on the North Shore. Next Wednesday, next week, on the 23rd of October, from 11:30 to 2 p.m, a large placard demo. Okay, the Stop 5G Placard Protest. And it's outside Vodafone, 74 Taharoa Road, Takapuna on the North Shore, here in Auckland. And it's going to be, as I said, Wednesday, October the 23rd, from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Parking may be difficult, but buses to Smales Farm, a two-minute walk, you can get that easily. Bring placards opposing 5G. We need to get creative. And you can share on Facebook too. 5G-Free New Zealand. 5G-Free New Zealand. Also, a lot of information on 5G.org.nz. 5G.org.nz. See the 5-minute video. Send that to all your friends. That will allow them to sit up and get serious about their children and grandchildren. Okay, can we make nuclear-free New Zealand the first country to be 5G-free as well? 5G-free New Zealand? Sounds good, doesn't it? Kia ora. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch
and Lisa Eyre
and Liz Gunn.
in the spirit of Aroha. Wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.